interviewed on Manx Radio on the publication of his book Legends of a Lifetime.
Very pleased to say that the author is with me here in the studio this morning. Good morning to you, George Quayle.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah. It's nice of you to come down all the way from Ramsey. It's I don't suppose you get into Douglas all that often, do you?
Not very often, no.
George, you were born, it tells us in the book, it's no secret, you were born in 1895.
That's right. Yeah.
Tell us about your parents and where you were born.
Well, I was born in the house where I live in the present time. Close to Mona, and father was and mother were there, of course, and he was born in the house before that, and his grandmother wasn't born in, but she lived just across the street in the old buildings.
So you were the third generation in this house?
Yes, that's right, yes. Third generation.
What age is the house now?
Well, the house, the present house, was built, I think, in 1840.
Yeah.
Well, the house before that was thatched, what we used afterwards as the barn and the stable and cows.
Yeah.
On the other side of the street.
But, well, that's all gone now.
That's all gone. But father was a wonderful man. He didn't go to school till he was 11, and he left school at 13.
Yeah.
He learned all they could teach him.
Was he a farmer?
He didn't want a silicon chip, because he could solve all these difficulties. He had four sons, but none of them as clever as what he was.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me one day, why wasn't he in the House of Keys? Well, at that time, there was no pay for the House of Keys. If you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth,
yes.
Whether you had brains or not, you got on the House of Keys, because there are better brains outside. I thought last Sunday morning, when I was listening to Mr. Quilliam, what a marvellous man he'd have been for the House of Keys, but of course he couldn't afford it.
Yes.
And that's what happened, but he had some influence outside. I remember Dickie Kane, when he was in the House of Keys, coming down to see father, and at that time he was intent on having tenants compensation in the Isle of Man for the farmers.
Yes.
Now father got him talked out of that, and the reason was this, that if you take today on the north of the Isle of Man, most of the farmers, their grandfathers were crofters, and if they would have had to find £200 to £300 tenants compensation for the man going out, they'd be crofters still.
I see, yes. Now, your father was a farmer then?
Oh, yes, farming, yes, that's right, yes.
What, did he have his own farm?
Well, we had the crop that I'm in now, present time, and then after that we were in Elm Bend.
Yeah.
And then we'd market garden and do it one time.
What about your own school days? How much schooling did you have yourself?
Oh, I went to school when I was about 6 and 11 to 14. Yeah. Some of the things I taught in school, I didn't know what it was all about.
Really?
No.
Where did you go to school?
Well, there's air school.
Was there?
We had about a mile to go to school.
Yes.
At that time. And we walked there every day. We had no transport there, at least, you know.
No, that's right. And what, can you remember any of your school days, anything? Did you get into any mischief?
Oh, I was, the logbook should have been kept, because I was cane nearly every day in the week.
Really?
not because I was the culprit every time, but I don't know. I seem to be my luck. But the second...
What sort of things you get caned for, George?
Oh, all kinds of things. There was some birds, I believe, were killed in the nest one time. I was never near the nest, but I got blamed for that.
Yeah.
I'd be talking. I couldn't stop talking. I'm something like I am now, you know.
Right. Well, now, those are the school days. Now, what are your very first memories? Is there anything outstanding from what? A very early age? Before school?
Going back, I got... Oh, to 1900 anyway, because I can remember Queen Victoria's death and the funeral.
Really?
I remember seeing in the cinema in Ramsey just a little flash of about 30 seconds of the funeral march and fast. Only time, first time I saw a moving picture.
Yes.
Never saw one for years after that.
No.
Time. Well, that was 1900. Well, then I remember Queen Alexander and Edward coming along to the Isle of Man here.
Yeah.
He landed in Ramsey. And I believe I told you, I told in my book, where Miss McCann's are living in Ash Hill, brought a dish of strawberries down and presented them to Queen Alexandra in the High Road to stop the carriage.
Really? What year was that? Do you know any idea?
1902.
Yeah. You were 7 years old then.
Yes, right.
A Amazing. What about your mother? What kind of woman was she?
Oh, she was a smart woman too. Very was smart. She came from Ramsey. The father had a couple of livery stables in Ramsey. Her name was Culprit. But my memory goes back for a long time around then, because I remember the first motor car.
Yes. Who had that?
A chap the name of Pickup from Ballard.
Yeah.
But the remarkable time was that to try to put over today the picture to youngsters of what the island was like that time was pretty hard.
Very difficult, yeah.
Because remember, we had no motor cars, we had no television, no wireless, no electricity,
no
telephones, no water laid on, no road transport, no tarmacadam roads.
It was the simplest form of life that we could imagine.
It was.
Yes.
Somebody said, why did they call them no good old days? Well, they didn't know any better and they couldn't do anything about it, could they?
Do you think they were good old days?
No, they were only in spots. I listened to Mr. Quillis the last Sunday morning too. He was bragging about this fine farmers up here that south had the hens.
Well, yeah.
Herons, I was always fond of a heron too. But I remember one farmer down there used to go and send the cart to peel and get about 5,000 herons and sell them down barrels.
Mm.
And the boys to the farm labourers were complaining to an old man one day. He said, well, you know what to do, pour a bucket of water in the barrel.
Yeah.
So he poured a bucket of water and that spoiled the heron.
Oh, I see.
But the farmer didn't waste the heron, he fed them all to the cows two at a time. Cows didn't mind the heron, but they want the salt.
What about some of these old customs that there used to be? I mean, wasn't there one where you weren't allowed to have daffodils in the house?
Aye, well that was the problem, of course, that in most of the houses at that time, because another thing too, in my earliest memories were there was at least between Lazier Church and the Ginger Hall, there was eight thatched cottages.
Yeah.
And most of these cottages had fires on the hearth.
Yes.
And even in the cottage that I'm in now, I had altered now, of course, but at that time there was a cupboard on the level with the hearth fire, and the goose was put into at the hatch.
Really?
And if she saw yellow flowers brought into the house and fell on the floor, she'd probably get out of the nest and spoil the incubation.
So the goose would be in the house?
Goose in the house, because the geese played a big part in the people's life.
Yes, they were very important to them.
They were taken back from the common lands at the back end and quartered and put down in barrels and salt and quartered the goose. Grandfather said we'd do a pot of broth out of a good wife of our family.
Yeah. Tell us about the common lands now. What was the situation with common lands?
Well, the common lands, I gave a talk the other day about that. The common lands now, all our hills are derelict now, nothing but tothams.
Yeah.
And yet in the days gone by, they were all farmed. Because as soon as the common lands were taken over and the common lands, the mountains, were let to one or two tenants, these people that had the rights during the year for to put their stock on the hills during the summer were debarred. And they couldn't have.
And that was why these Thaltons are there.
That's why they couldn't carry on.
Yeah. But the Thaltons were lived in your
area. Oh, my time, yes. Oh, I remember quite a lot of them.
It must have been a hard life, though.
It was a hard life, all right. But then we didn't know any better.
No, that's right. You didn't know.
No.
You tell us in your book, in one of the early pages here, about a love herb. Now, people's ears will be pricking up here on hearing that.
Lush negree. You get that in the little bogs on the mountainside. It's a flycatcher.
Yeah, it's a flower, is it?
Little blue flower.
Yeah. And it catches flies. What
catches
it
flies on the leaves.
And why was it a love herb? How did that come about?
Well, they thought that if they plant them could catch a fly and make them stick to them, would make a lover stick too.
I see.
That was why, yes.
And did it work?
Oh, I believe so, because I believe they do, I think I mentioned in my book too, they do, it is used as a stimulant for sex in medicine.
You've not tried it yourself?
No, I haven't. No, I didn't need it.
Right. George, when I went down to your house a few weeks back, you gave me some funny little things that you called fairies' ears.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Growing in your garden.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
They're a fungus that grows only on the tramen, the roots of the tramen.
Yeah.
And the old people thought You see, that when after a shower of rain on a dry day, these shrunk and dried up, and you didn't see them.
Yeah.
But they thought that after a shower of rain, that these were left on the tree so they could hear what's going on during the night time.
This was a bit of superstition as well,
oh,
really.
Oh, yes, you do.
Folklore.
Yes, yes.
The Tramon, I suppose we ought to explain, is the elder, in fact.
It's the elder tree, yes,
yes.
Aye. That was outside of every house.
Yes.
The Tramon tree, a shelter for the fairies.
Yes. It was a sort of... The Tramon tree was a bit mystical, wasn't it? Wasn't it a tree of the devil, a bit... thought to be.
I don't know without it.
No, I had read that somewhere.
But anyway, in one of that poems, I believe I report to you, was that there was a tree outside that gave a bit of shelter to the fairies and winter and fruit that you like to eat in autumn.
Yes. Now, there's another tree that crops up in your book, which I think is a blue alder, isn't it?
Oh, yes, that's right. The Billygarum.
The Billygarum.
Blue-leaf buds. The Billygarum.
And what is
well,
this area?
This locality was in our glen. It's a round puppet that had been washed out one time and steep, rocky sides, and the stream comes down over the top and flows along the bottom.
Yeah.
And the black alder was on the top, top end of the cavity, and these little blue buds, was that give it the name of the Billygarum, and the birch tree was on the other bank.
Yes. What was so...
people thought the fairies were there all the time, you know, and a lot of these old people wouldn't go near it.
No?
No.
Really?
Not even in my lifetime.
Could you get down into this?
Oh, yeah, you could go down. It's pretty, but it's pretty steep.
Yeah.
Down along the bottom was covered in sphagnum moss and other flowers.
Yeah. George, we'll take a rest there. We'll come back and talk a little bit more after we've listened to some music. Give us a chance to finish our cup of coffee off. We'll talk about seeing fairies and ghosts, and we'll talk about hedges and probably wild flowers and the days of ploughing with horses and harvesting with scythes. All of that in a few minutes' time. Talking about his book, Legends of a Lifetime, which is available from the author. It's also in the Lexicon bookshop at the present time, because I saw some there yesterday. Why did you decide to write the book? Did somebody say to you, George, it's time you put your memories down on paper?
No, it wasn't that, but I've been such a member now for nearly 30 years of the Antiquarian Society.
Yes.
And at that time, I was president, I think I was 49, and at that time the lectures I'd given to the Antiquarian Society were only in the proceedings. And at that time there would be perhaps 500 or 600 members, now there's more like 1,000.
Yeah.
And that stuff was all tied up. And some of them advised me to see would I put them all in the book so that they could get the back numbers like.
Yes. It makes marvellous reading anyway. Now, what about the old Manx people were always seeing fairies. Now, you had a theory about that.
Oh, yes. I think I saw that in the 1920s. I remembered... we grew in 2 acres of wheat, and I knew that the wheat had what they called smut, or what now people call it a smut, it was a fungus.
Yeah.
And there was another plant among the wheat called ergot. The ergot is used in midwifery, and I don't know what's the effect, but anyway, that there was on the wheat, and when you crush a head of wheat, you only had a spoonful of cocoa, like cocoa.
Yeah.
Well, that was sent to the Sulby Mills and threshed. Well, the Sulby Mills hadn't facilities for cleaning wheat, like all the big mills. And this was all ground up. And when the flour come back and was baked into bannocks or sort of bread, I don't know what my wife did that night anyway, and we had this to go to bed. Well, when I went to bed, I felt that I was about 12 feet long. I couldn't get a picture of you. I couldn't get a picture of anything at all.
Yeah.
And I'm quite convinced that what the old people... So what they thought they saw was just hallucinations.
Really?
Aye.
Yes.
At that time.
So this was just, as you say, something that grew on the wheat.
Ah, yes, that ergot, the fungus.
And worked like a hallucinatory drug.
And, yes, that's right.
But in present day time, of course, all that is refined out.
Altogether.
Yeah.
But the people were quite genuine. They did believe they saw things.
They had a terrific belief in the little people, though, didn't
they? Oh, they did. Aye. Well, I mentioned that there too, you see.
And did you ever see anything that you thought were fair?
Well, I don't know. I'm very careful over that, you know.
Yes.
I believe the very first step I used to go down to the Billygarum. That was not doing about that.
You saw those early footsteps?
I never saw any yard footsteps like it, and I've seen those hundreds.
What were they like?
Just like a little baby's foot about a year.
Would they not be a sheep or a lamb or something?
No, only one. There's no 4 feet.
No 4 feet?
One going one and a half of the other.
Really?
Whether he's a rabbit that lost his other hind leg, I couldn't tell you. He might have been that too.
You'd have known all the footprints of the animals anyway, wouldn't you? Right, let's move on to the talk about the farming now. Now, you talk about the milling and so on. Before you get to the mill, of course, you've got this business of harvesting. Now, how were they harvesting crops when you went to work on the farms, first of all?
Well, a lot of the corn and the crops were cut with a scythe.
Really?
They were smart men.
Grandfather,
we had a met in Sobia, met a hay. And grandfather could cut that from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6 till 4 in the afternoon, an acre, with a scythe.
Yes. You're down in the lowlands, you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, down the lowlands,
Were there no machines around then?
There were some machines with the making the sheep. You were sitting there, the thing, and pushing the sheep off, and people were making bands and tying them up.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I like to point out. Why all these thatch cottages have disappeared, is the fact that before the First World War, about 904 or 5, the steam mills come in.
Yes.
And the corn was all thrashed, pushed down through the mills and crushed up.
Yeah.
But in my early days, I learned to thrash with a flail when I was about 7 or 8. Grandfather made a flail for me too.
Yes. This is just beating the corn on the ground, is it? How do you explain that?
Two sheaves is put head to head and you just thrash the heads.
Yeah.
The rest of the straw is left perfect cylinders.
Yeah.
And when that was thatched, it ran the water off.
So there's no waste then, really?
No. But when the corn was put through the big mill, that was all crushed and it didn't last only a year or two on the houses, and that's what happened today.
Yes. But when you're doing this beating of the heads, I mean, do you get everything off? Is it wasteful, that?
No, everything's taken off.
Yeah.
There was another Manx word called rasvut, which means half seed, it's half thrashed.
Yeah.
So you fed the sheaf of corn half thrashed to the cows and kept enough for seed.
I see, yeah.
Rasvut.
So they were harvesting on the little crops with scythes. What about the ploughing? Did you do any ploughing yourself?
Oh, I learned to plough early. I was tickled at Mr. Quillies,
John Quilliam last week.
He was telling me we love with the swing plough. I love with the swing plough too. It's just marvellous. The swing plough, I suppose you can give a good demonstration of the grovers of that kind now. But the feather of the stock of the sock wasn't horizontal. It was tucked up a bit.
Mm.
So that your furrow was a V shape rather than flat and top.
Yes.
And that was to make a better groove for the seed because it was sown by hand.
Yes, yes. And you'll have gone on ploughing with horses for long enough, and then when did the tractors come to you? Did you get...
Oh, God, I don't know when the
tractors... You'd almost given up your job by then.
I have the First War. Percy Brook had the first tractor burnt down in Derby.
Yes. Well, now, we were talking at the beginning of where you live at the moment, but you spent a lot of your life up on the hills.
Well, I was 38 years up there. Yes.
What, in a house that you built for yourself?
Oh, yeah, I built a one-button bungalow in 1929. Things were all terrible altogether. People have no idea today.
Yes, did you raise a family up there?
Well, I had four children.
Yeah.
Three girls and a boy.
And you found it a hard life?
Oh, hard life, We were never hungry.
No, well, you see, John last week was saying that the biggest, most used food was broth. Did you find that?
We had a lot of broth, but we had plenty of... We killed our own wethers, muttons, and we had butter and cheese and potatoes and... We had no money.
What about your clothes? Where did you get them?
Oh, we lived there for a long, long time.
So they had to last you.
It's surprising that some of the characters I knew too. I knew one old man too. I used to put the sagan rope from his ankles up to his knee for leggings. Keep himself dry in the wet time. Yes. And some of the clothes, of course, were made of Manx wool, made of southwards. And the suits of clothes down in Sobey at the present time, care with age.
Yeah.
Only coming out for the anniversary or the big cattle show.
Yes.
Made 50, 60 years ago.
But you had to work out a lot. out in bad weather? I mean, did you have what we would call foul weather clothing then? How do you keep your back dry?
Oh, maybe a sack over your shoulders.
That's all?
Aye, aye.
There was no plastic bags even then, was there?
And then down below, talking about the last day about these farmers too. No, these farmers who weren't fit, man. The,
go on, you can say what you like here.
One old lady that's living that way far from me at the present time said she was working for a farmer when she was a schoolgirl down in Derby.
Yeah.
He was in the House of Keys afterwards, but he's... Anyway, there's no stock among them, so it's no matter.
I see.
He used to say, oh, it's too wet for the horses out, boys, you better go and duck some turnips. That's the kind
of they used to look after the horses, but never mind your back, eh?
She said, I've been crying with ducking the whole frost off the top of the turnip tops when I'd be ducking them at that time.
Now, you mentioned earlier about the first motor car. What sort of car was it? Was it maybe a Ford, was it?
No, it's a Ford at all. I don't know exactly what it was. I know it was taken, it's a bit temperamental because there's a little bit of a hill at Llandough Body there, and we were going to school, and I remember one day we had to push him up to get him over the top. So how he's getting up Bellevue, I don't know at that time.
No.
Well, after that then...
Did they have somebody walking in front of it with a...
No, but they had that old engines.
Yeah.
I remember the steam engines coming in.
Yes, really.
Traveling down the wheels.
The traction.
There was one, the highway board had one, and there were Tom Cruise, the big heavy man, was the driver, and Johnny, the brother, was going in front of the red flag.
Yeah.
Because he'd have to stop maybe about six times in a mile that he'd horses pass. Horses couldn't stand them.
No, it must have been frightening for them.
Oh, it was, no. Well, after that then, in the north of the Isle of Man, there was Dr. Rowe, Dr. Sutton and Dr. Barber all got cars. Up to that time they had dog cars going around the country.
Yeah. The roads wouldn't be made for cars in any case.
It was terrible altogether, man.
What were the roads like? Were they just stone, built with stone?
Built with stone and earth put on top, and then the cars had to roll the stones in.
They'd get in an awful mess in the winter.
Oh, right, 3 or 4 inches of muck.
Yeah.
And the highway board had a scraper with them 9 or 10 up and down scrapers like your hand.
Yeah.
And the two men used to walk backwards and forwards from Ramsey out to the Ginger, and that was their quarter. And that was heaped alongside the road. And then the farmers carried it off to the side.
Clear the muck away.
Clear the muck away. Yeah. And Mr. Ramsey Moore was a friend of mine, late Ramsey Moore, and we saw this old scraper up at the Llandough Quarry, and we got it for the museum. It's over the museum now.
Yes. Of course, even if you look around the fields now, they're full of old reapers and not so much binders, old reapers and ploughs and so on lying around. You've seen farming go from the scythe right through to, as you say, the silicon chip almost.
Ah, yes.
In the course of your lifetime. It's phenomenal, really, isn't it?
You couldn't start farming today with all those tractors and stuff.
No.
And these people have lost a novel that they couldn't build a stack long.
What a stack? So you made a stack of corn?
A stack of corn, a stack of hay.
Yes.
You had to build them so they could get the water out.
All the crafts have gone?
All the crafts are all gone. A whole lot.
Do you think it could be relearned by people?
No. You've got too many motorbikes now.
George Quayle's a guest on the programme. We'll talk again in a few minutes after we've had some music and some information. And George, incidentally, has in common with George Burns a like of a good cigar. You enjoy your cigar for a few minutes, George. We'll have some music and a break. It's George Quayle talking about his book Legends of a Lifetime. We've covered an awful lot of ground so far. Can I bring you on to one or two modern things? What about, you said you saw your first film was Queen Victoria. Did you ever go to the pictures very much after that?
No, not very much. We had no transport. We had to either walk or take a bicycle into Ramsey.
Yeah. Can you ever remember seeing any films then?
Yeah.
It doesn't bother you the least?
No, not the least.
Well, there was no radio, of course, when you were a youngster.
No.
Remember that coming in, do you?
We were in, in the 30s when then we got a radio set.
Yeah.
And it had things on the side, regulators thing.
Yeah, it'd be a battery operator.
Oh, a battery. Just a kind of a bar with about four, what do you call it?
Did you listen to the radio much, George?
No, not an awful lot. I met an open town town one night, and I turned it on at 1 o'clock in the morning. I got an American program on it.
Yeah.
This whole thing.
Yeah.
Aye.
But it's the thing that doesn't bother.
No, never bothers. We had an awful lot of reading. We done a lot of reading. My wife was a clutter out reading too.
Yeah.
She'd been a school teacher. And
yes. What about television then? You'll not be bothered about that, are you?
No. I have it shut off.
You've got a television in the house.
Don't
bother with it.
No, not very much done.
When you see, you're 85 this year, I think, George.
Yes,
when did you retire? Have you been sort of retired for a while now?
I retired after I was 65.
Yes. So you've had 20 years of time to fill. Admittedly, you've got a lot of ground there.
My wife has dead 18 years. I'm living 18 years on my own.
On your own.
Yes.
Well, as you were saying when we were playing that music, you're quite happy for people to come down and see you down there.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Where's the best direction to get to? It's opposite the highway board, more or less opposite the highway board.
The Bernahera.
Bernahera
Road.
Yes, that's right. And if anyone wants a copy of Legends of a Lifetime, John, you've got plenty there, I believe. It's also in the bookshops, and it's a very, very interesting book indeed. Now, what about going off the island? Did you go off the island much?
Oh, no. Well, in latter years, I was all gone a few times. It was up north of Scotland, up a place called Forest, at one time, with my daughter. And
this would be after you'd retired, I suppose, really, was it?
No, not before.
But you'd not get off the island when you were a young man, though.
Oh, no, never off the island at all.
No, not many people would, really.
Yeah, never got Douglas very often, either.
No.
No, two or three times at
all. It would be an event to go into Douglas.
Oh, too true. Right. Well, I knew people in our parish that had never been to Douglas, only perhaps once in a lifetime. The whole world was that. People don't understand now. There was no that time. You couldn't. The people couldn't grasp what the size of the Isle of Man was. They had no idea.
No.
They had no pictures. Half of them had never seen a map.
No.
The whole Isle of Man was just their parish around.
That was their world, really, wasn't it?
Six days a week. So
yeah.
Six days a week, and then a day at chapel or church.
Yes.
And that's all there would be.
Did you go to chapel or church much yourself?
Ramsay Moore told me that he was preaching in Baldwin, and he went to an old lady that was there, and she said, "I've heard the sea many a time, but I've never seen it." This is Baldwin. And I was, a few years ago, I was leading Antiquarian Society, or with Antiquarian Society, up to, what's the place you go down there with the Slock? No, not the Slock, on the south of the island.
Port Erin direction, you mean?
Aye, the rocks on one side and the rocks on the other.
Yes, I know what you mean.
And the lady in the outside, she was come from the North Island, man. She'd been there 7, 8 years. She'd never been down to the sea in really about 200 yards.
Really?
That's a fact.
Do you think there's people still around here who haven't been off the island?
Oh, yes, any about time ago. We've got them down our way, too.
Have you?
Oh, any about. I met an old fellow the other day, and he had a bicycle. He was a retired farmer, and he was opposite my house counting the cattle in the field opposite.
Yeah.
And I said, "What the devil?" I said, don't you get away across the water, have a sight? I said, "What all the money you got?" "Oh, don't be little money, master." He said, "Take it on or die rich." But I said, "You won't ever see your name in the curry, how much you left."
No. Right, well, what did you do to entertain? I suppose you ran around the roads barefoot when you were a kid.
Oh, I too. I went to school. I lost three or four, I suppose, nearly a couple of months in the summer. We never knew we had shoes on us.
No.
No.
Was it better? Were the summers better then, or what?
Well, I don't know.
Or were you tougher, or what?
Oh, tougher. Aye. Too dry and true.
Yes, my mother always used to say she used to go around barefoot in the summer, and she always claims that the summers were scorching hot then, and they're not now. But I think I don't know about that.
Time and El Mellum done.
Anyway, I think we've just about run out of time. I think we've covered an awful lot of ground. Really. We could have done several hours more to talk about this, but it's been very nice for you to come along and chat to us. And off you go now. What are you planning to do in the next 20 years now? You're going to write another book?
That'll be the worst. I've been a bit worried over that, you know.
No.
I've been a bit worried over it. I have been, next 20 years will be long. Awful job.
George, thank you very much for coming in.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Steve. That is George Quayle, who wrote the book Legends of a Lifetime. He's been entertaining us with some tales this morning, and it brings us very near.